Okay. Well, you can tell when Jim's away, can't you? We've been talking about ethics for the last maybe 6 months, I guess. And last time I spoke, I talked about a modern-day problem with ethics, which was euthanasia. That is a big issue with the medical profession right now. And another issue that I'm going to talk about this morning really involves all of society, because in the United States we've become very polarized over this issue. And this issue is abortion. I'll say up front that I'm pro-life, but I will try to present this information in as a balanced way as I can, because each person has to make up their own mind about how they feel about abortion. And I think the bottom line is, at least in my mind, is when does personhood begin? Because that's where a lot of the argument lies. Does it begin at conception, or does it begin somewhere else along the line up to childbirth? So that's what we're going to talk about this morning. I'm going to give you a little bit of anatomy and physiology 101, and then we'll touch on the theological and the political ramifications, and then we'll kind of summarize it and hopefully have some time for some questions and answers and comments. So the first thing we need to do is to define abortion. What is abortion?
Discontinuation of a pregnancy.
All right, discontinuation of a pregnancy. Anything else? Well, you're right. That's from a scientific, technical standpoint, that's exactly what abortion is, whether it's intended or whether it's not intended, whether it's on purpose to abort the products of conception, or whether it's something that happens naturally. In our society, though, we've come to think of abortion as being the deliberate termination of a pregnancy, either through physical, surgical means, or through chemical medical means with some type of medication. When it happens spontaneously, then that's usually referred to as a miscarriage. That's a spontaneous loss. Most miscarriages occur in the very early pregnancy, often before a woman even knows that she's pregnant. And it's been estimated by OBGYN people, and this has got no data to support it because it's hard to measure it, that about 50% of pregnancies end in a miscarriage. And if you think about conception occurring in mid-cycle of a woman's periods, then she's 14 days pregnant when she misses her first period and wonders whether she's pregnant or not. By that time, implantation has already occurred, and the embryo is developing into a human. So let's look at some of the methods of abortion. I'm going to just list these. I'm not going to go into much detail on. In the first trimester, there are actually four different ways that are used today. Aspiration abortion is where a tube is placed up into the womb and a suction applied, and the embryo is removed that way. A D&C, you dilate the cervix, the opening to the womb, you put an instrument, a curette up there, and scrape the lining of the uterus out, which removes the embryo. RU 486 is sometimes referred to as the French method, because it was first described in France. That involves two medications. One medication basically kills the embryo. The second medication, taken 48, 72 hours later, causes the uterus to contract and expel those products of conception. And then, of course, the morning after pill, which you hear a lot about today and which can be bought across the counter. That, again, is a drug that prevents ovulation so that if a woman has unprotected sex around mid-cycle, she can take this pill after the next morning, a morning after pill, and that will keep her from ovulating and obviously prevent pregnancy. It also thins the lining of the uterus so that implantation is more difficult. But once implantation has occurred, it does not cause an abortion. So if she waits too long or if she ovulated at the time of her encounter and waits a day or two, she could be pregnant because implantation might have already occurred. In the second trimester, so that's the first trimester. In the second trimester, a D and E, which is a dilation and evacuation. Basically, the embryo is physically removed with instruments. I call this a salt solution, which is not really used anymore. Usually, an injection of the amniotic fluid with a medication to cause an abortion can be performed. This is the second trimester. Salt solution used to be used a lot, but not anymore because of danger to the mother. If they hit a vein and inject the salt into the vein, then she becomes overloaded with salt, and that can cause some medical complications. So salt solution is not used much anymore. I probably need to change that. And then prostaglandin suppositories. Prostaglandin causes contraction of the uterus, and the products of conception are then expelled in that way. Now we're getting up to the third trimester, and this is a dilation and extraction. This is the partial birth abortion that you hear so much about in the papers, and legislatures have tried to pass laws against it. And this is where the mother is now 6-7 months pregnant. The baby is pulled out by the feet. A pair of scissors are inserted into the back of the neck, and basically the baby is pithed to allow collapse of a cranium and to extract the baby. It's a very horrific type of abortion, and that's the reason why there's so much talk about making it illegal. And then the last method is a hysterotomy, which is basically a C-section. And this is late in pregnancy again, where she has a C-section to remove the baby. So those are the primary types of abortion. The first four are the ones that are most commonly used. The first two are the most common of those. And again, probably 90% to 95% of abortions occur in the first trimester of pregnancy because of Roe versus Wade. We'll talk about that in a minute. Abortion fallacies, and I've got a question mark about that because there's arguments on both sides of the aisle. If you're pro-life, you can find articles that will support your stance. If you're pro-choice, that group finds articles that support their stance. So we'll try and determine what's a fallacy and what's not. One of the questions is, abortion is a private decision. So, yes or no? True or false? Well, if you talk to the pro-choice people, it's a private decision. It's the privacy of the mother. She gets to make the decision. She's the incubator. She's the oven, so to speak. If you talk to pro-life, they bring up the fact that it takes two to tango. So a husband is involved somewhere. Certainly a doctor is involved who has to perform it. And then you can stretch that to the family, friends, even to society as far as the economic impact. Do we pay for abortions? Do we pay for children that are born that are not wanted? Adoption? There's just all sorts of ramifications of that. I tend to lean toward the fact that this is a fallacy. It's not a private decision. It involves many more than just the mother.
And certainly, doesn't the private decision come when she has sex? There's the decision part right there.
I'm sorry?
Doesn't The private decision would be when she has sex. That's the private
decision. When she has the abortion.
No, when she has it. That's when the decision should be made.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you can make arguments and say, well, you know, they should have used protected sex, you know, but they didn't. So, you know, you're right.
How about the baby doesn't he or she get a vote?
Well, we'll get to that with Roe versus Wade in a few minutes. Of course, that's the argument of the pro-lifers. The baby has a vote. We should give it the opportunity to have a vote. It's needed for rape and incest. True or false? Come on, guys.
True or false?
True, false. All right, see, it's either way. If you talk to the pro-choice, then this is always brought up, and they usually give examples of some poor lady that was raped and couldn't get an abortion. If you talk to the pro-life people, it's just the opposite. Child has a say on this, and they can bring up an example of some child born from a rape or an incest that turns out to be a genius, you know.
Well, what about, rape and incest? In, as Christians, don't we think this God made something wonderful out of something evil, which is what he does?
That's right.
He made something beautiful. He created a life out of something that was not.
And I'll get to that in a minute when we talk about the theological and the biblical implications of the decisions that we make as Christians. But I'm trying to present it right now as evenly as I can to show you the problems that have polarized the topic so much in our country. The incidence of rape and incest is less than 1% of all pregnancies. And 95% of abortions are done for because the mother decides she wants to have it done because she doesn't want to have the baby. So they're basically abortions on demand. She had unprotected sex, she's gotten pregnant, she's single, she's a teenager, they're a poor family and economically can't afford it, all sorts of reasons that she doesn't want to have that baby. So 95% of abortions are on demand. And that's, I think, the major issue that we as Christians can address to our society. You can't regulate legislate morality. Can you or not? Well, you can't make people be good. You can create laws that direct them in that direction, but you can't make society a perfect society through laws. People are going to break laws. It happens all the time. But, you know, we have laws against murder because we know that's wrong. We have laws against child abuse. We have laws against traffic violations. So you can't legislate morality, but the law can direct, it can instruct, it can educate people in the right direction. And that, I think, is a big argument from the pro-lifers. Abortion is painless. True or false?
False.
Well, you're right, but childbirth is painful too. I mean, I haven't had a baby, but Rosemary has, and I think she had a lot of pain. They've done studies and done questionnaires in women that immediately after an abortion. About a third of them say that the pain was significant, whatever that means. About a third of them say it was moderate. And about 20% say that it was very mild.
You're speaking of physical pain.
I'm talking about physical pain, and usually with an abortion in the first trimester. A DNC or a vacuum evacuation.
But the mental pain, they say, lasts.
Oh, we're getting to that, Rosemary.
Never get over it.
You've looked at my slides, sweetie. All right. Abortion is safer than childbirth. True. It is. There's one death per 160,000 abortions. There's 13 deaths to every 100,000 childbirths.
One death per abortion.
So the death rate is lower with an abortion, but the complication rate is unknown.
Is it safer for at childbirth you're dealing with two people?
And at childbirth, you're dealing with 9 months gestation, so you're dealing with a much bigger problem.
Well, that's what I mean. Maybe that's why the numbers are skewed.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. But in absolute terminology, it's true. Abortions are safer as far as death is concerned. Complication rate is vague.
Should you qualify that and say it's safer for your mother?
Yes. That's a good point, Jeannie. It's safer for the mom. The mortality rate in an abortion is 100% for the baby. You're right. I didn't think of that. That's a good point. All right. Abortion reduces child abuse. That's false. No, that's true. Abortion does... That is a fallacy, that abortion reduces child abuse. It does not reduce child abuse. They've done studies in the first 15 years after Roe versus Wade, and they showed that the abortion rate doubled and child abuse rate quadrupled in that 15-year period of time. So it does not reduce child abuse. And I think all you have to do is look at the papers and listen to the news today, and there's lots of evidence of child abuse. Abortion reduces illegitimacy. True or false? That's false also. Again, the same study showed that abortion rate doubled, and so did illegitimacy. It doubled also over that 15-year period of time. It has no psychological sequelae. Rosemary, you can answer that one.
It does.
Again, the information is all over the board. If you look at the Planned Parenthood and the pro-choice people, they can find gobs of papers that say it's not. Same thing with the pro-lifers, gobs of papers that says it is. You have to look at the way the paper was written and the way the study was done. If you do the study immediately after the abortion and you question the woman, then it says no psychological sequelae. But if you look at them long term, 10, 15 years later, when they began to retrospectively look back on what they did, they began to have guilt feelings, they began to have depression, they began to have what's called anniversary syndrome, the anniversary of their abortion, they began to wonder about that child they never had, then the evidence would suggest that there is psychological problems. And in fact, pregnancy support services here around the corner, and all crisis pregnancy centers usually have a ministry to help women deal with their abortion and their psychological problems. So I would lean more toward that there are. It depends on where you're coming from. All right, it has no physical sequelae.
False. False. Absolutely.
Say absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. And you're right. It's false. It does have physical sequelae. We don't know what the incidence of infertility, and of course that's a concern psychologically for a lot of these women. And a lot of these women have more than one abortion. They have 3 and 4 and 5. We do know there's been a big controversy about breast cancer, but it seems like now that most of the evidence demonstrates that there is an increased risk of breast cancer with women who have had especially multiple abortions. It increases about 30%. Why? Nobody knows. Probably some kind of hormonal relationship, but that's the only explanation. Yes? I can't answer that question.
I mean, because you would think if it has physical consequences, it would have it regardless of whether you know about it or it's
Right, but a woman usually doesn't have but one miscarriage. Well, sometimes they have more than one. Well, so I don't know. I don't know.
I'm just curious. I'm going to answer that. I'm a nurse and I work in this industry. A miscarriage is more of a natural happening, so a lot of times fetus is felt naturally as opposed to having to intervene. And in an abortion, you always have to intervene, which causes scarring, you can get infection. It's an invasive process versus a natural process with a miscarriage.
And usually an abortion interrupts the normal hormonal balances abnormally. It's an intended interruption of all of that rather than a natural.
I think that a miscarriage has the same hormonal start, and maybe it's just earlier in the process.
I don't know.
Because physically, I mean, it just seems to me that
it's completely different. It really is. You can induce an abortion using hormones. But when a miscarriage, it happens by itself. So you're
right. I understand that completely. So, but it just seems to me that physiologically, and this is not my field, but physiologically there is no difference to being pregnant and having a natural miscarriage than being pregnant and inducing that miscarriage.
Well, I can comment on that as well. With a miscarriage, there's ACG levels, which will begin to drop before, as the pregnancy dissolves and miscarries. Whereas in abortion, you're going in there and the hormones don't drop until after the baby is out.
It may be the abruptness of the miscarriage versus the abortion.
Okay, I think that's our homework. Everybody Google it and find out. I'll certainly do that after this lesson, because that's a good question.
Yeah.
All right. Statistics worldwide, there's about 40 to 50 million abortions a year worldwide. That's 325,000 a day worldwide. It's 28 abortions per 1,000 childhood-bearing women. Childhood-bearing women is defined as between the ages of 15 and 44. So it's a good way to measure it because it eliminates males and children and population in general. So it's 1,000. It's 28 per 1,000 worldwide. Remember that 28 because we'll come back to it in a minute. In 2008, which is the last year we had really good data to show it, there were 38 million abortions in undeveloped countries compared to 8 in developed countries. And we know that the number of abortions in developed countries is much lower than in undeveloped countries because of poverty, because of ignorance in contraception, et cetera, et cetera.
You answered it as you were talking. Never mind. Okay. The availability of contraception.
Right. And two, the countries that have the highest rates, two of which are China and India, a lot of abortions are done for sex selection. Because they want a male, and if they find out it's a female, they have an abortion.
Charles.
Yes.
Charles,
yes.
Also in Western and Northern Europe, they have restrictions on abortion after 20 weeks,
right.
Whereas the U.S. has abortions, almost all the way through in many states. And
that's true, but most abortions in the United States, we'll get to this in a minute, are done in the first trimester. By far, the vast majority, 90% of them are done in the first trimester in the U.S. All right, let's look at the U.S. U.S. has only 3% of world abortions. Almost all half of pregnancies are unintended in the United States. We have about 6 million pregnancies in the U.S. a year. About 3 million of those are unintended. And 40% of unintended pregnancies are aborted. So that gives us an abortion rate of about 1.3 million abortions a year in the U.S. Since Roe versus Wade in 73, there's been 57 million abortions in the U.S. alone. that's more than the people killed by Stalin, which was 40 million, and that was more than the people killed by Hitler, which was about 30 million. So we've had 57 million abortions over the last, 40 years. The statistics in the U.S., let's see where we are, is 16.9, so just round it off to 17 abortions per 1,000 childbearing women. That's lower than the world, which you remember was 28. 40% of women will have an abortion. 40% of women in the U.S. will have had an abortion by age 45. In North Carolina, we had 55,000 abortions per year, at least in 2011. The rate is going down in North Carolina, but the numbers are going up because the population isn't large. And here's a graph showing that from 91 on the left to I think it was 2011 on the right. You'll see that the rate is going down. But again, the absolute numbers are going up because the population has increased from around 3 million to now a little bit over 8 million people in the state. We're growing rapidly. I think we're number 11 in the nation. Is that right? Or 10? Something like that. All right. This is Embryology 101. It takes a male and a female to have a baby. Each has half of the genetic code. When fertilization occurs, we have what's called a zygote, which has a full complement of DNA. That's called conception. I'm sorry?
Is there going to be a test?
Better take notes. This is an illustration of what happens. The ovary is there in the middle. The mid-cycle, the cyst ruptures, which contains one egg. One follicle ruptures, which contains one egg. The fimbriated end has kind of got a wave-like motion, which pulls the egg into the fallopian tube. In the meantime, the sperm will swim up the fallopian tube, meet the egg. Conception occurs. The egg begins to divide as it moves down the fallopian tube until it reaches what's called a blastocele stage, which is probably 200 or 300 cells, but now with a cavity in the middle of it, and that implants into the uterine wall, which hormonally has been stimulated to be receptive to implantation. So that's Embryology 101. If you start at the upper left, that's the zygote. As it begins to divide, it follow the arrows down to the middle, the big one with all the red in it. That represents the uterine wall. And then you look at the one on the bottom right. The embryo is at the top. The yolk sac is at the bottom, that little glob at the bottom. The little branchy thing is the placenta that is now starting. And this is the embryo at probably about 2 to 3 weeks out from conception, from fertilization.
That was us at one time.
That's exactly right. Well, actually, you were a gleam in your father's eye first. These are some pictures that I pulled off of the internet. This is the embryo between 1 and 8 weeks. It's called an embryo, but the first 8 weeks is called a fetus after that. Again, we're kind of going through it. The blastocyst is what implants. It's somewhere around 6 to 10 days. So when the woman realizes she's missed her period, you've already got implantation. And the development of the baby, because by 2 to 3 weeks, you've got all the organ systems that have been identified and are now beginning to develop. The cell division rate at this point in time is something like about 50,000 per minute. 50,000 cells per minute are being produced. The egg, a fertilized egg, is a little bit smaller than a dot on a piece of paper. Heart rate begins to beat by about 4 weeks, arms, legs, fingers. toes, they all begin to develop by week 8. And the size of the baby is now about the size of a walnut. And darn it, I forgot to bring my little thing of the baby. I was going to pass it around. All right, the fetus begins at 9 weeks up until birth. The face is apparent by week 10. Quickening, which means movement of the baby so that you can feel it. This is what Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, had when Mary came. It was quickening, the baby moved. That's usually about 20 weeks. Medically, a baby can survive outside the womb in the neonatal ICU with lots of support from 24 weeks on. But we've now got exceptions to that. There are some that have been born as early as 20 weeks that have survived, but very few. So as technology moves forward, survival becomes better. At 10 weeks, this is it's based upon ultrasound, and they've made pictures out of this. I think you can recognize the face up there on the baby's face, the arms, the torso, the legs. This is at 10 weeks and at 13 weeks. So this is at the very end of the first trimester. Political perspectives, Roe versus Wade. January 22nd, the date of my birthday, but 1973. I was born a little bit before that. But it was the year that I came to UNC as an attending in surgery. So that was 43 years ago. Roe versus Wade. It was a 5-4 decision, so it wasn't unanimous by any means. It was controversial even at that time. And the Supreme Court sided on the privacy of the woman. They ignored the personhood of the baby. It was all about privacy. Privacy is not provided for in the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution about privacy. But the Supreme Court, using the 14th Amendment as a basis, and I'm not a lawyer, I don't know all the ins and outs of that, They made their decision based upon the privacy of the woman. And another thing they did was to establish the trimester system. That had been used in medicine for years, but they applied the trimester system to political means. And they said that up until that time, the states had all had laws that either prohibited abortion completely or put restrictions on abortion. And they varied from state to state. Some states didn't even have any laws against abortion. But the federal government, when they stepped in with the Supreme Court, they basically said the federal government rules over the first trimester because that's a privacy issue of the woman. And after the first trimester, the second and third trimester, the states then have some control over. So states can pass laws that restricted or that they have to jump through certain hoops as long as it's not burdensome. And so that's where some of the laws come about, you know, if it's a minor, they have to get parental consent. Or there has to be a waiting period of maybe 48 hours before the abortion occurs. Things such as this. The most recent one is the doctor that's doing the abortion has to have hospital privileges in case there's a complication. Because of the difficulty when they have a complication showing up in the emergency room and they're unprepared for it. So it established the trimester system with the division of state and federal rights. It was probably driven, if you look from the pro-life viewpoint, it was probably driven by the sexual revolution of the 1960s. And during that period of time, there were a number of books written concerned about population control. They were convinced that we were going to overpopulate the world and not be able to feed everybody. And there was concerns about starvation and this sort of thing. So those two issues probably had some play in the decision of the Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade. But it was also riddled with misinformation. Forget the doctor's name, the main OBGYN doctor that testified before the Supreme Court gave a lot of information which was incorrect. It was not based upon data at all. Later, he regretted what he had done. He became a pro-lifer and became very, very active in the pro-life movement.
Nathan, right.
That's the name. I had blanked it. One of the things that he said was that there were about 1 million illegal abortions per year, but there were actually less than 100,000. Another piece of information was that they said there were between 5 and 10,000 deaths per year, but the death rate had been going down before penicillin. That was in 1939. There were about 1,000 deaths in the United States per year from an abortion, illegal abortion. After penicillin and antibiotics came after World War II, the rate was now down to less than 50 a year by 1970. So that was grossly wrong information. But they claimed that the rate of deaths from abortion was masked because it was claimed to be death from some other process. But the interesting thing is that after Roe versus Wade, statistics have never changed. You would have thought that if they had been masked by some other diagnosis, that those diagnoses would have dropped. But they haven't in the death rate.
So how many die per year today
from an abortion?
Yeah.
One in 160,000. So very low. The ones you read about in the paper, of course.
So how many
are
done a year again?
1.3 million. Abortions per year in the U.S.
Okay, so about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. When does personhood begin? Because that, to me, is the crux of the whole problem, and I'm not going to tell you what I think. There are some who are very pro-life, very far to one end of the pole, that say personhood begins at conception. This is based upon theological teachings in the Bible that says the material and the spiritual are combined. They're not separatable. The body and the soul are together. And so they say that conception is the beginning of personhood. There are others that say, well, just because you got a fertilized zygote doesn't mean it's going to divide to make a human. So they say that personhood begins with cell division. The third group says, well, you need the nutrition of the mother and a placenta, and so personhood doesn't begin until you have implantation. This becomes a very important issue when you're talking about IVF, in vitro fertilization. Again, it's a different subject, but in vitro fertilization involves taking the sperm from the man, the egg from the woman, fertilizing them in a petri dish, waiting till cell division occurs to know that it's going to be a healthy conception, and then re-implanting some of the fertilized eggs into the mother, hoping that some of those eggs will implant and form a baby. And of course they do multiple, they'll put in three or four fertilized eggs at a time, and sometimes you get more than one child, so that's the reason why we get multiple births with in vitro fertilization from time to time. So implantation becomes an important thing as far as the IVF industry is concerned. Neural tube development, twinning cannot occur after the development of the spinal cord. And this raises theological questions. Well, does a soul split? You know, you have half of a soul in a twin? You know, there's all sorts of arguments. So some people say neural tube development is when personhood begins. Heartbeat, that occurs at about 4 weeks. quickening, that's 20 weeks, movement of the baby, the mother can feel. Pain, and pain wave activity, and there's some stuff being done illegally now about pain. Viability, that's 24 weeks, or birth. Some people consider personhood begins at birth. I'll leave that decision up to each of you to make. Abortion, the political perspectives. Congress, there are federal laws that can be passed. I think about a year or two ago, the House passed a law against partial birth abortions, but it failed in the Senate. And it probably would have been vetoed by the president. So there are federal laws that can be written, but they're very difficult because of the condition of Congress right now. A constitutional amendment is probably out of the question. It requires a two-thirds vote. Congress can't get together on simple things, much less this. And it also requires three-fourths of the states to ratify it, and I think it's within 10 years. Is there a lawyer that can tell me that? I believe I read somewhere where it's 10 years. It has to be within 10 years, or it fails. State legislatures can pass all sorts of laws. You know, waiting time, notify the parents if it's a minor, notify the husband in some places. So get permission from the husband, too. So states
can... The constitutional amendment can also be started in the states. It doesn't have to be started in the states.
You're right. But it's a big hurdle to cross. So unlikely to pass. Abortion, what are some of the biblical perspectives? I'm not going to go into any detail with this because Jim has already covered a lot of this in the last 6 months. Man is created in God's image in Genesis. God is a master craftsman, also in Genesis. Pregnancy is a co-creative process between the man, the woman, and God. Much like a marriage. A marriage is between man and a woman and under God's will and direction. So this is different from the Greco-Roman culture of antiquity at the time of Christ, when it was thought to be just between a man and a woman. And in fact, you've heard the expression, you ask somebody, how many children have you got? Well, I've got two and one in the oven. Well, that comes from antiquity. The woman was looked upon as an oven. She was looked upon as the womb was to nourish the baby. The man provided the baby, but she was to nourish and allow that baby to grow. If it completely was mature, it was a male. If it didn't grow to completion, it was a female. That's a whole lot different from today because it's the male that decides whether it's male or female now. We know because of the XY chromosome, sex chromosome. All right, so it's a co-creative process. The New Testament perspectives, Scripture condemns infanticide. Personal identity begins with conception. The Bible doesn't say that directly, but it implies that from some Scripture. Conception... is a blessing and a gift, and Scripture teaches life and love, the sanctity of life. And we celebrate the sanctity of life, of course, every January when Roe versus Wade comes around. So, summary, and hopefully we'll have a few minutes for some more questions. These are my thoughts, and so you may agree or disagree with them. We must recognize that we live in a pluralistic society and be willing to compromise on some issues. As far as I'm concerned, although I would rather there not be any abortions at all, I'm willing to compromise on rape and incest and danger to the mother's life, as long as it's not exaggerated. There are a lot of women that have an abortion because they say they're depressed or they just can't mentally handle it. Well, I'm not sure that's a reason or more of an excuse. But if we did that, we would get rid of 95% of abortions, which are abortions on demand. So we need to recognize that we live in a pluralistic society and there are different opinions about it. And we must continue to work to be salt and light to the world. And we must focus on the personhood of the embryo. And that becomes a problem because there are all sorts of different concepts as to when personhood begins. Is it at conception? Is it at implantation? Is it at quickening? And so each person and each group of people has a different opinion about that. That's a difficulty. And then it's not a partisan issue. It's not Republicans versus Democrats. It's not Catholics versus Protestants. It's not Muslims and Jews versus Christians. It's not a partisan issue. There are people in all categories that support abortion as well as support life. So we need to work together. A constitutional amendment is unlikely to pass. I've said that. Progress can be made at the federal level in some pro-life issues, such as late-term abortions. The state laws can be passed that reduce but do not eliminate abortions. The Supreme Court can reverse its decision, and that's the reason why it's so controversial. Every time a Supreme Court judge retires, everybody wants to know what his thoughts are on abortion, because there's hope among the pro-lifers that this can be reversed. You know, Drew Scott was a wrong decision by the Supreme Court before the Civil War. They said that slaves were property, not human. But they were wrong. Of course, it took a Civil War to solve that problem. Hopefully, it won't take that on abortion. So now, we're ready for questions and answers. You can ask all the questions you want, but I'm not sure you get the answers. Or make comments. Speak loudly so everybody can hear you.
I work in the infertility world, and I have seen, I would say, close to hundreds, not literally hundreds, but close to hundreds of women who had abortions. Now they're trying to get pregnant. And the fear and pain that they have, first of all, when they... The guilt, they think God's punishing them. Now I did this and now I can't get pregnant. So there's a lot of that, which I think a young woman needs to really consider. The other thing is, when a woman tries to get pregnant through infertility, finally does, and loses that pregnancy at 6 or 8 weeks, that is a death to her. It's a person and it's a death. And I don't understand in the pro-choice realm how it can be dependent on how of the woman's situation. In other words, is it a life or isn't it? And that should not necessarily depend on your situation and your feeling. So they're crying over a 6 week old embryo that is implanted, that in your world that's a baby. So why is it not recognized as a baby elsewhere?
Yeah.
So that was just my comment.
Yeah. It's a very personal approach to it.
It's a tough call because, especially when you work in the field, is it a baby that you're trying to protect and save, or is it the mother that you're concerned?
Right.
It's a really hard. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
Charles.
Yeah. Another question, comment. Yeah.
Something that speaks exactly to that. We were living in Germany at the time period that they brought communist East Germany, who had virtually no restrictions on abortion, together with West Germany, who had very high restrictions, and of course to legally join these two situations. And the way they solved that has created peace, actually, legally speaking. And the way they solved it was, they said that this is indeed a murder. That child at conception is a child, and it is a legal murder. However, as we know, there are occasions in our civilization, our societies, when murder plays an important role and is acceptable. And so they put the onus on the mother. The mother has the right to have an abortion if she goes through a certain health as well as spiritual. She either can counseling. And there can be no... Yeah, that's got to be documented that she has done this with professionals. And there can be no influence from outside, from the husband or the parents or anything, because this is then the individual mother's situation legally and morally. And she won't be punished, but it will be recognized as a murder.
Is there any restriction on the timing of it? Is it confined to the first trimester or what?
Yeah.
Confined to the first trimester.
Yeah. And that has really brought peace to this issue in Germany.
Okay, another question back there.
This is a really, like, awful thing to talk about, but, you know, you can have little girls who are 5, 6 years old who were raped by, it's a very rare circumstance, I just want to address it, who are raped by family members or married, and end up getting pregnant, and in that case, you're almost deciding in terms of the life of the child for the life of the child. How would, I don't know, I just want to throw it out there.
Right. Well, that's where I'm willing to compromise. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm willing to compromise on that issue. Of
course. Could you repeat the question?
The question was what about the very young child that is raped, or the father has incestuous relationships with her, or a family member, or something. You're basically talking about a child with a child. And so where do you draw the line? You know, do you, you know, and that's okay. A difficult question. I saw in, there's a pro-life email I get every week with articles in it. There was some child over in Iran or Pakistan that was like 7 years old and delivered a baby. Can you believe that? A child having a child, basically. So, you know, is abortion acceptable under those kind of situations? You have to make a decision. Any other comments or questions? Yeah.
Speak up,
just speak up.
Why don't you stand up? Stand up. And
I was just wondering, it seemed like the pro-choice arguments center a lot on the arguments that you listed in the fallacy slide, and I was just curious, how do you answer a lot of those fallacies without also condemning pregnancy, since they're pregnant, like, or childbirth in general? Like, childbirth also has psychological and physical surprise.
It's a quagmire. I don't know. I don't counsel them. They do have counselors at the pregnancy support services, and you have to. How long is it, Rosemary? It's like 3 or 4 days of counseling to learn to be a counselor, to talk to somebody about that.
It depends on how the sessions are. I don't know.
One of the big factors in crisis. Pregnancy centers is ultrasound, and for the woman to see a baby moving in there, maybe if it's 6 or 8 weeks of pregnancy, they've got arms and legs and they're moving, and you can see the heartbeat. That becomes a very vivid impression on them, and they will oftentimes keep the baby. It's kind of interesting that Planned Parenthood doesn't do ultrasounds. Because of that, a lot of women don't appreciate what's in them. You know, they've been indoctrinated into that this is tissue. This is not a baby. This is just tissue. So you know, again, you can take either side, but that's where the argument comes.
Charles.
Yeah, there's another question.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, stand up, stand up.
Speak up.
Okay, first of all, I want to say that I pretty much agree with everything you say. I would like to get some references to the statistics that you quoted, because I think it could be useful. There's another thing that hasn't been brought up at all, however, which is kind of interesting, which is the role of the father. I heard you say that the father isn't allowed to have any input at all in Germany.
Right. Yeah.
Yet I wonder if the baby is born with the father, is responsible for rest of that child's life. They're supporting the child.
Yes.
So there's a huge financial implication on the father based on the decision that the mother makes without any input from the father. That certainly seems like a legal issue that's never brought up.
Yeah, the material side of that doesn't play a role. When they're dealing with a situation of murder there, it is just strictly the moral, ethical aspect. And what they're trying to prevent is that someone outside of that woman, that situation, has an influence on her moral, ethical decision.
There's a lot of other issues with our modern-day technology. Our technology has gone much faster than our ethical decision-making. And you get surrogate motherhood, for example, and you'll read in the paper about some woman that they implanted the mother and the father's zygote into her, and now they discover that the baby is malformed. The parents want the baby aborted, and the surrogate mother doesn't. You know, now, whose baby is that? I don't know. You know, but there's all sorts of issues. You know, in vitro fertilization and those eggs that are left over, what do you destroy them at some point? I mean, you know, if you believe a zygote is a person, then, you know, you're committing murder. You know, I don't know.
Charles?
Yeah, yeah. Another question. Stand up so we can hear you. And so I can see you.
It's not a large statistical sample, but most of the people I know who are very pro-abortion rights refuse to admit that the baby is anything but a person after birth, period. Now, they won't even entertain the conversation, which allows them to take the stance. Okay? If it's not a person, then it doesn't matter.
Right.
But interestingly, one of the strongest pro-abortion people I know, her opinion is the government shouldn't pay a dime. Period.
Now, did you say Roe or Doe?
Pro.
Okay.
Say it should be on demand, but the government should not pay a dime. Mm-hmm. If you can't be responsible enough in your life to make this happen, if you want to end it, you better come up with the cash and walk in with it in your hand.
Right. And an abortion.
That's an interesting perspective for a pro-abortion, a strongly pro-abortion person.
Right. And an abortion doesn't cost that much. It's only about $300 or $400.
Well, it depends on when.
I'm talking about the first trimester.
6 months. There's more.
Well, right. But those are rare. Those are rare.
But it was just an interesting, a very strongly pro-abortion person felt the government shouldn't be paying for any of it.
Right.
Charles.
Okay, another question. Stand up.
Actually, a comment. I mean, I think one of the ethical issues we have as being pro-life is how do we express that. I would bet that we all agree that a sniper rifle at a distance of 200 yards in a doctor is not the right way.
Correct.
But what's the right way to express that? I think that we have the opportunity to do a lot of damage in the almost hatred that's sometimes expressed, you know, to someone who's gone through this, even if it's not directly that, they're hearing the harshness of what we see from pro-lifers on television and other things, which we can talk about media bias later. But, you know, the question in my mind is how do we as pro-life people express our opinion and the caring for the people that are doing this, whether it be the person who works at Planned Parenthood, or the young woman who had an abortion, or the young man who supported the woman who had an abortion, how do we address that? That's a topic we don't seem to talk about. You know, we'd like to change laws and all these things, but I don't know that that's the right way. Changing hearts might work a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree.
You mean screaming at someone's face is
yes,
the way to win them to your
argument. Probably does not work.
It's very interesting. Pregnancy Support Services is right around the corner from Planned Parenthood up here on Sage Road. And they get a number of women come in there thinking they're going to Planned Parenthood. And so they get an opportunity to discuss it with those women. And some go on down to Planned Parenthood, some don't. So, you know, it has to be done with compassion and understanding and be willing to listen to them. Was there somebody else over here that I missed? Any comments over here or questions? Okay, it's a tough subject. Go home, think about it, make your own decision.